It's time for Truth for the Times with Pastor Peter J. Peters. Truth for the Times will give you new insight, knowledge, and understanding of the times. This program may not be politically correct, but it is biblically correct. You've heard the lies and deceptions of the day. Now it's time for the truth. However, we must warn you, due to the nature of truth and man, this program could be offensive, shocking, and even frightening. But remember, the truth sets free and changeth not. And this Truth for the Times broadcast could very well change your life. So take time for this Truth for the Times broadcast with Pastor Peter J. Peters.
I'm Pastor Pete Peters, and I want to welcome you to the interview section of our Truth for the Times television broadcast. We have a fascinating interview for you, and I'm going to start off by just asking you a question. Who discovered America? Oh, yeah, we all know the politically correct answer, don't we? Why, Columbus, of course. Well, now you're going to hear the truth. It may not be politically correct to tell the truth, but it's time to tell the truth. Columbus did not discover America. We're going to be interviewing Pastor Earl Jones, historian, author of, and he authored this book called Christians Before Columbus. And I've got to give you a warning here. I know that some of you are going to say, what in the world are you talking about? Everyone knows that Columbus discovered America. And it's going to sound incredible to you, but I challenge you to stay with me. Stay with this interview, and you'll hear things that are not being told to you. You'll hear the truth as to who discovered America. I'm going to show you a rock, a fascinating rock. It's not just a rock. It's a rock that has the Ten Commandments upon it. This rock is not just a rock with the Ten Commandments, but with the Ten Commandments written in ancient Hebrew. And where is this rock? It's in New Mexico. Pastor Earl Jones, several years ago, took me to the place. We climbed through the fence, walked out to the pasture of a rancher's land, and there we found on the side of a mountain what's been known by many archaeologists to be the Ten Commandments written in ancient Hebrew way, way, way before the time of Columbus. You didn't hear about it, but if you stay with us, it's time for you to hear the truth. Columbus did not discover America. Thank you, Pastor Jones, for being on our program.
Thank you very much. I consider it an honor.
I think I will just start right out by pointing out that in your book, you show the evidence, and many books have shown the evidence, of Europeans having been here on this continent way before the time of Columbus. What are some of the evidences, and how do we know that they were here?
Well, very interesting that the subject itself, of course, for many years we have noticed geologically short scribed marks on large rocks. And for many years the geologists would simply say that what was happening here was that during the ice age, the movement of ice just made these scratches on the rocks, and that's simply all they were. However, in more recent years, they have discovered that there are repetitive symbols shown in these scratches on the rocks, and they then discovered through the science of epigraphics, and it is a comparatively new science, and that is the study of ancient dead languages. Through the science of epigraphics, they have discovered that these scratches, so-called scratches, supposedly from the Ice Age, were actually a language that can be deciphered and has been deciphered. And so that was the start of my thought and my reasoning that, well, now, if this were the case, the Amerindians did not have written languages. So if this be the case, then who was it that was here first or was here so many years ago and had a purpose for being here? So Pardon me, go ahead.
I was going to say, it was not just men like yourself, but there's been many men that have thought this way. Is that the case?
Oh, yes. Probably the foremost man in this field is a Dr. Barry Fell, who was a professor at Harvard University, and his avocation, his real true love, was that of this science of epigraphics. And he took it upon himself to be one of the foremost runners in this field of trying to develop the system of deciphering these marks that were on rocks. And they discovered that it was Ogham script. It was what they had called Ogham script. And he found that by just looking at each and many of these marks, he saw that there were groupings. It made up of lines on a horizontal line, and then there were series of up to five marks above the line or five marks below the line or a grouping of marks all the way through the line. And he found that by studying this very intensely, he found that there were 15 consonants and five vowels in an alphabet. And then from these 15 consonants and five vowels, there were also a grouping of words, and we call them diphthongs. There were a few diphthongs that were in there in addition to this. And so now here was the alphabet. But now we had to understand, well, okay, so that is an alphabet, but of what language was it of an alphabet? Well, we found out that it wasn't just one language. There were many languages that were associated with it. But basically speaking, it was from the Celtic people. The Celtic people all the way from Ireland and Scotland and England through the Spanish Peninsula and then on down into the Rhine River Valley of Germany were these great Celtic people. And this Ogham script was basically their language. And other peoples, of course, picked up on this system of the Ogham script made up of these lines perpendicular to and from through the baseline that was there on the rock.
I'm going to pause here because I know that there's going to be some in our audience that says, this sounds incredible. I've never heard of such a thing. And that's why we want you to order the book. We're going to tell you how you can get it here in a little bit. Christians Before Columbus. And Pastor Earl Jones, who is a historian and a researcher, as well as a Christian pastor, has done a remarkable job of making a very concise presentation in this little booklet, Christians Before Columbus. And as I said, we're going to tell you how you can have that in a moment, but bear with us, because the evidence of the European people being on this continent long before Columbus is overwhelming. What are some of the evidences, like coins and things like that?
Well, even prior to the issue of coins, we find that Ezra Stiles, and of course we all know Ezra Stiles as being the gentleman who later became the president of Harvard University. In 1780, Dr. Ezra Stiles had discovered in Mount Hope Bay in Rhode Island, he had discovered that there was a Tartesian high stern ship, and he knew it was from the people of Tarshish because of the description of the ship. Here was it inscribed on a rock there at Mount Hope, and he had found that under it was an inscription. And, of course, he had it, tried to have it deciphered, and they couldn't decipher it at the time. But later, again, because of the epigraphic scientists, they found out that here was, on this inscription, was Voyagers from Tarshish. This stone proclaims. And fair so that is, that's just one of the symbols that we
Tarshish.
Have seen.
Who's Tarshish?
Well, Tarshish is the Japhetic sons of Japheth, of the son of Noah.
There was Shem, Ham, and Japheth.
Yes,
and so Tarshish were the descendants of Japheth.
Yes,
and what we're going back. When did the ships of Tarshish sail?
The ships of Tarshish sailed 1,000 years, 700-800 years before Christ. And so here were these people that were here with the idea of trading the ships of Tarshish going out to trade with the Celts who were already here in the New World, in Canada and the United States, and they came to trade for their furs, for their mining of copper and for other precious minerals, and they would bring in what they had to offer, and generally they brought in coins and they brought in other goods that they were bringing in for trade for these products of the mines and of the furs of the animals.
What language, when Ezra Stiles found this rock in the 1700s, what language was that in?
Well, that language there was in a Punic type of language, and so it was not that of Ogam script, but the epigraphic scientist also, of course, translated that and deciphered it and found it to be of Cufic type verbiage.
Imagine, 1,000 years before Christ, we're talking about ships coming to the New World, and we've got archaeological evidence of it going back as far as being entered into Harvard in the 1700s. We haven't heard about it. What other signs do we have?
Well, of course, the real disbelievers among us would say, well, if there were any societies here prior to Columbus, then they must have brought coins with them.
Right.
And, of course, if coins is the issue, then, of course, we can find coins. There have been coins, many coins found. There was a pastor before around 1787 who was going down a road in Massachusetts, and which is now State Road 16, the Cambridge-Malden Road, and he uncovered... there was a group of men working along the road there, and they had uncovered a rock, just a flat rock there in the road, and they lifted the rock up, and lo and behold, underneath the rock were coins of some strange inscription on them. And there was about 2 quarts of these coins. Now, here again were the results of people having come here with money to purchase these furs and to purchase the gold and silver and copper from the Celtic miners that were here, and they had brought coins with which to do it. And well, now he didn't know what the language was on these coins, and so they took them to the Harvard University, and the Harvard University tried to decipher them, and of course in those days they couldn't because epigraphics hadn't been discovered, and they found then they put them into the archives for some nearly 200 years. And then 200 years, more recent years, they brought the coins out, they looked at them, and the epigraphic scientists started deciphering this ancient language, and once again, they found it to be in a Punic, a Cufic-type origin language. And so here were these coins that were used undoubtedly by the mariners of the ships of Tarshish. And then we had the Roman coins. When the steel turning plow was invented by Niebold, they could plow ground at a much deeper depth. And there, all of a sudden, were being uncovered Roman coins, tremendous numbers of Roman coins. And in those days, now they knew they were Roman coins because all of our students in the universities that had that were getting their degree had to know Latin, and they had to know Greek. And so when they picked up the Roman coins, they looked at the Roman coins, they said, this is Latin. These are Roman coins. And they recognized them to be Roman coins. And yet here were Roman coins a foot, 18 inches under the ground in the New World. And this was done long before Columbus was supposed to have been the person to discover America. And so they knew that these were Roman coins, and the American people at the time knew that they were Roman coins.
I want to get to the portion in your book that's very fascinating. Of course, before I do, I want to say this, too, that we know that the politically correct position today is that Indians are in America, and then the evil white man comes on Columbus' ship and takes Indians' land. But we're not told another story that Pastor Jones does a remarkable job of addressing in Christians Before Columbus, a story that has to do with the southwestern region of America. Now, remember, I showed you the photograph of the rock, the Ten Commandments. Maybe we could see that again. A rock in New Mexico that Pastor Earl Jones took me to. Now, I've been there to this rock that you see, a rock inscribed with ancient Hebrew, the ancient Hebrew language, the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue. And where are they at? In New Mexico, just west, where were we? Just west of Albuquerque, weren't we?
Yes.
And anyway, who put this rock here and wrote the Ten Commandments? That in itself is a tremendous story. And Pastor Jones, I want you to address that aspect of the civilization that was here, like what, 700, 800 AD?
Yes.
In that region.
There was a vast civilization here in the southwestern part of the United States. And of course, later when the Spaniards came in the early 1500s, they were supposedly looking for the fabulous seven cities of Cibola. They knew that they were here. Now, how did they know that they were here? Because these seven cities of Cibola had also likewise been looking for gold, and they had found gold, much gold and silver. And they were shipping this gold and silver back out to Europe via the large Celtic ships, ocean-going ships that Julius Caesar talks a lot about. And so here was this Decalogue on this large basaltic rock about 18 miles south and west of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And the rock was inscribed in a language that was extant at the time of King David. Now, that didn't mean that the language or that inscription was done at 1000 B.C., but it meant that it was from a language on a scroll, had been written on a scroll, and from that scroll, it was the Decalogue was copied onto this large rock. And it was in ancient Hebrew. It wasn't in modern Yiddish Hebrew. It was in ancient Hebrew, which is a very distinctly different language. And based on that, of course, I became exceedingly interested. And then Dr. Cyclone Covey from Wake Forest University had written a book that he had called Calilus. Mm-hmm. And it was on simply one of the apparently seven cities of Cibola. And it was located over in the area of Tucson, Arizona. And, of course, there was, they had discovered in the 1920s and early 1930s, they discovered 6 to 8 feet under deep caliche-laden soil. And caliche, of course, is a lot with lime into the water, and it makes it almost like concrete. And once it has been hardened through the years, over many, many years of deposit, it's almost impossible to then lay that dirt back in there without knowing that it has been disturbed. And so once they discovered this and opened it up, they knew it was totally undisturbed soil. And now here, these many 6 or 8 feet under the soil, they found some very interesting memorabilia, tremendous artifacts.
You talk about this in the book. I want you to tell them about the cross. I think that's so fascinating.
Yeah, thank you. The first thing that they found was a large lead cross. Actually, it was two crosses in molten lead that was cast. There were two crosses back to back, and they were riveted together with lead rivets. And then on the back side of each of those halves of the cross, the inscriptions that were there had been covered with beeswax. And, of course, they had bees there with them for their honey. And so this beeswax, they had encased it, the inscription on the crosses with the beeswax, and they uncovered that, and lo and behold, here was this inscription. And of course, I do believe that it is so important that I would like to read just what was on that cross. So if I may, I would just like to read that. Now, on one of the crosses, at the top of the words, on top of the word, are the words "In Memoriam." And then on the cross arm at the left is a profile of a head with the words Britain, Albion, and Jacob. Then in the center is another head, profile with of a head which with the words Romans, Actium, and Theodore. Now, of course, obviously, the Britain is English Isles. Albion is another word for Britain, the English Isles. And, of course, Jacob is a man's name. On the middle was this second profile, and the words Romans was there. The word Actium was there, and that was a province of the Roman Empire in that time frame. And then the third, and the word Theodore, which is a man's name, and of course, obviously, he was a Roman. Then on the right side of that cross is another inscription, another profile of a head, with the words Gaul, Sane, and Israel. Well, of course, Gaul is France. Sane is a river in France, and Israel was the man's name that was depicted there. And then, of course, down the bottom, down the vertical beam, down that side, you can see it says this, and it was deciphered again by these epigraphic scientists. Consuls of great cities together with 700 soldiers, A.D. 800, January 1. So now here, 800 A.D., which of course was...
They were numbering it, 800 A.D.
Which meant after Christ, and so they knew that Christ had been born. It was on crosses. To me, that represented that they were Christian, and that they knew that Christ had been born, and it was 800 years after his birth.
Now, the story that they tell on the cross, I want you to stay with us. It's fascinating. And you're going to hear a story about a civilization of Caucasian people that had an insignia on a cross that's talking about A.D. They understood that Christ had been here. We're talking centuries and centuries before Columbus. Before I go any further, Pastor Jones, I want to tell the people that everything they've heard so far is pretty well in this book.
Yes, it's
Christians
right.
Before Columbus, and I want to tell you how you can get the book. If you'd like to order the book, write to Truth for the Times, P.O. Box 766, La Porte, Colorado, 80535. Pastor Jones, this is a fascinating story, and I know the story is written right there on this lead cross, a story that really every American schoolchild should hear about. Tell us.
Yes. Well, of course, I had described what was on the horizontal cross, beam of the cross, and then on the top. Now, actually, the inscription that was on that cross itself, as they had deciphered it, says this, and if I may read, Councils of great cities together with 700 soldiers, A.D. 800, January 1. We are born over the sea to Callalus, an unknown land where Taltasus Silvanus ruled far and wide over a people. Theodore, that's one of the names, the Roman, transferred his troops to the foot of the city of Rhoda, and more than 700 were captured. No gold is taken away. Theodore, a man of great courage, rules for 14 years. Jacob rules for 6. With the help of God, nothing has to be feared. In the name of Israel, O.L. And that O.L. was the scribe who put this on the lead cross. Now, from that, of course, we can see that this Taltasus Silvanus was a Toltec. And the Toltec Indians were in Mexico, and they were extant about this same period of time. And it was a very large and powerful empire in Mexico, and he was fighting this city of Rhoda under Theodore, King Theodore. And he was fighting them, and of course, he didn't want them apparently digging for the gold. He didn't want them taking the gold out. And so Theodore was there fighting. And it indicated that that the Toltecs weren't able to steal that gold, weren't able to get that gold from the city of Rota from Theodore, but that 700 troops were captured. And so he had to indicate there that that was 700 of the Toltecs that was captured, because there were only 700 troops of Theodore. So he still had his army, and he had captured 700. Well, so here we were then with that situation taking place. Now, the second cross, and there were, as I have pointed out, several. The second cross said this: Jacob renews the city. With God's help, Jacob rules with mighty hand in the manner of his ancestors. Sing to the Lord, may his fame live forever. Well, now Jacob, of course, as you recall, there on the horizontal was a native of Britain, or Albion, and of course he succeeded Theodore as the king of the city of Rota. And then, of course, the third cross yielded another inscription. And it says this: from the egg, and now what, that was a term that was a colloquialism at the time, meaning from the beginning, from the egg, A.D. 700 to A.D. 900, nothing but the cross. While the war was raging, Israel died. Pray for the sons of or soul of Israel. May the earth lie light on thee. He adds glory to ancestral glory. Israel, defender of the faith, Israel reigns 67 years. And so you see, Israel, one, the first Israel, was born on the Seine River in France. And so here we have the second portion, or the second person on this horizontal, or actually the third person on this horizontal beam of the cross. And of course, that was indicated there on that first cross. And then the next inscription reads this: Israel 2 rules for 6. Israel 3 was 26 years old when he began to rule. Now, what we're seeing here is there was a long succession of kings over many years' period of time. And it says this: enter Nicene War to conquer or die. He flourishes in ancestral honor day by day. So here was this city of Rota that was fighting the Toltecs, and it was an internecine war, and they were fighting to the death, and of course they were trying to continue with the work that they had done, but now they were being surrounded, they were trying to be captured by the Toltecs, and they were fighting for their very lives. And so the next inscription says this: A.D. 800, Israel 3, for liberating the Toltecs, was banished. Now, what he had done was he apparently had captured the Toltecs, and then in a Christian manner, he let them go. He didn't finish them off. He just let them go. And so for this, of course, Israel 3 was banished. He was first to break the custom. The earth shook. Fear overwhelmed the hearts of men in the third year after he had fled. They betook themselves into the city and kept themselves within their walls. A dead man thou shalt neither bury nor burn in the city. Before the city, a plain was extending hills rung the city. It is 100 years since Jacob was king. Jacob stationed himself in the front line. He anticipated everything. He fought much himself, often smote the enemy. Israel turned his attention to the appointment of priests. We have life, a people widely ruling, O.L. And then the last inscription was this: A.D. 895, an unknown land. Would that I might accomplish my task to serve the king. It is uncertain how long life will continue. There are many things which can be said until the war, while the war rages. 3,000 were killed. The leader with his principal men are captured. Nothing but peace was sought. God ordains all things. And again, it was signed OL. Now, OL was not the name of a man because this was done over a several years period, many years period. So OL was a title of a scribe of some sort in their city of Rota there that was doing the scribing for this work. And so it is obvious now that here at this period of time, this one particular city was in real deep trouble and it was being destroyed. And they were very fearful for their very lives. And of course, we know then that in AD 1300, all of a sudden, all of the Celtic people all over what is now United States and Canada, within a 100-year period of time, they just disappeared off the face of the earth. We don't know whether it was disease. We don't know whether there was a common uprising among all of the native Amerindians that were here, including the Toltecs. But it is quite obvious that over a 100-year period, these people just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Now, well, these people that we're talking about are the ones that archaeologists like Barry Feld and others maintain wrote the Ten Commandments on that rock in
Yes, and of course they also wrote in Ogam script all over the United States and Canada and even on down into Mexico and elsewhere. The inscriptions were just everywhere, and they're right today still finding these inscriptions. And Barry Fell, Dr. Barry Fell, is still very active, and he is out doing his work, even though he is retired as an instructor or professor at Harvard.
Couldn't that explain one of the reasons when the Spaniards came many centuries later that they were looking for gold and looking for cities? Because it was known that these people actually existed?
Yes. Well, actually, it wasn't many years later, if you think about it. You see, over a 100-year period, around 1300 A.D., they just disappeared. Well, the Spanish came in 1500 A.D., just a scant few years after Columbus was supposed to have discovered America.
Ladies and gentlemen, imagine what we're saying here. Now, if there was not proof, if there was not evidence, how would a man dare say this? But the point is, there is proof. There is evidence. We've just showed you in this short interview so far the cross of these people and their writings. We're talking about information that should be broadcasted from one sea to the other in America. Certainly should be taught in our schools, but what do we hear? No one came to America until Columbus. And, of course, then when the white man came, he took the Indians' land. And quite frankly, Pastor Jones, there's evidence that the Indians themselves wiped out these white people after they had taught them agriculture. Some maintain, I don't know how you feel about this, but I've actually read that some maintain even some of the inventions like the bow and arrow was not theirs to begin with, but it was given to them.
I am not familiar with the bow and arrow situation. However, I am familiar with a lot of the history of the construction of the buildings of the Southwest. For example, we have the word adobe, which is the type of material that adobe blocks are made of in buildings in the Southwest. And it's a very, very substantial type building. The last hundreds of years, because it's a semi-arid country, and the dirt baked by the sun does not melt. And yet we call it today adobe. But the people who brought the idea here were the Berbers, who had come in with the Libyans, and I will discuss that in a moment. And they had come into the Nevada area and also then further into the southwestern portion. And they
what time period?
This was in the time period of 700, 400, 700, 800, 900 A.D.
Again, there's archaeological evidence of it that we're not being told about.
That's true. And so here were the teachings of how to build the Pueblo
adobe
structures.
Mm-hmm.
There were structures showing how to irrigate land, and these people showed the native Indians how to irrigate using the waters from the river, and they did this. And they show, and those Indian works are still there. I mean, the irrigation works are still there in Arizona, and even in some of the places they're still being used.
But you understand what you're saying is not politically correct. It wasn't very long ago. I was watching on public television about the mound builders. I don't know if you saw that broadcast or not, but I watched this thing about the mound builders, and what was being said was that racists in times past had attributed the building of the mounds to the European people, and that it was another effort of the racist white man to take the poor Indian's heritage. And I was astounded because it was very obvious that the archaeological facts were being influenced by what is politically correct today. It's politically correct, of course, to attribute nothing but bad to the Caucasian Europeans that came to this continent. And what do you think is the reason that we don't hear these things?
Well, there was all of a sudden the Columbus mystique
right.
took place. And the knowledge in our schools, the books in our schools back so many years ago.
Books in our school years ago did not teach that Columbus discovered America.
That's right. They didn't early on because our people early in America knew that these Roman coins had to come from somewhere. These cufic coins had to come from somewhere. They had to come from educated people. And so consequently, they knew that there was something, somebody here. And, of course, then when the Columbus mystique took place, all of a sudden we were taught that the earth was flat. It wasn't even round, and that it was flat, and that if you came off to the edge of it, you just fell off. And then Columbus.
In other words, it was taught that that's what the men believed in Europe, and now Columbus was going to dispel that, right?
That's correct.
Now, itself, you point out in the book, I think, is absolutely erroneous.
Absolutely erroneous, because here, about 239 B.C., at the time, in that same time frame of Alexander the Great. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Alexander the Great had come in and conquered all of the known world at the time, and his entire project was to make a new world order, just like it is. Nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, the new world order is not new at all.
Is not new at all. And Alexander the Great, one more time, tried it. He wanted a one-world people, he wanted a one-world religion, and he wanted a one-world government. And so he tried this in the Mideast, and of course it was the center of government at the time. Well, there was a man by the name of Eratosthenes, who was a Cyrene from the port of the coast of Libya in the northeast portion that was called Cyrene. And they were actually Greeks that had moved down into that area because there was much water there in the hill country, and they used it to irrigate. And this Eratosthenes was a brilliant man, and he reasoned that the earth had to be round and that water covered a major share of the earth, and that he developed a system of meridian circles of the earth. And he used a means that of measuring the distance to the sun. And
it's rather kind of an ingenious thing. Didn't he count the time of the sun coming up and as it moved across?
Yes, and of course we must understand also that day, the new day actually started at the zenith at that time. In fact, the new day technically started at the zenith until about 1925 when
right.
it was changed to midnight.
Noon, yeah.
Noon, and at noon was the zenith. And of course, Eratosthenes reasoned, or he proposed a system of meridian circles that when the sun reached the zenith on every particular day, at that point, where he was, there was a meridian circle in his mind drawn. And if he were someplace else, say 500 miles to the east or west, at noon, at the high point of the sun, would be a different time, but it would be a different location. And so he took the entire globe and he made the meridian circle. Now today we use the longitude and the latitude circles made up of the earth, coming from this man Eratosthenes in 239 B.C. Well, now,
in other words, in 239 B.C., it was understood the world was round.
Yes.
But yet, what do we hear that it was Columbus out to dispel this ignorance of man that the world was flat? Again, we're talking about a truth for the time that needs to be said. And that is, we're being lied to. We've got archaeological evidence, friends, that there were people here on this North American continent way before Columbus, that there were Christian people before Columbus, and not only that, we're going to talk about that in a minute, there were people so far before these people we're talking about in the Southwest that were the European people. But think about it. I don't know about you, but it kind of makes me wonder, why is it that someone is giving us this, what is Pastor Jones called, the Columbus mystique? What do you think the political reason is for all this? Or maybe I shouldn't ask you that because there's so much more I want to cover yet in the book.
There's several reasons that could be given as to why they would want Columbus to be the person who discovered America.
By the way, before you get into that, maybe I ought to just tell the people that you address that marvelously in part two of this book.
Yes.
Now, Columbus was not necessarily a little sweetheart that he's being made out to be by a lot of people. You know, he's a good little Christian boy, and that he was being led by Isaiah, and that he was going to show the world was round. But maybe before we get off on that, I'm going to ask you, because I want to get some points in here for time that's left. I want to talk to you about Wyoming. But are there more things that you want to address here about the people of the Calluses in the Southwest?
No, the Callus in the Southwest is, we covered that pretty well.
Okay.
Now,
and we're talking there about 700, 800
AD. 700, 800 AD, and of course that one particular location apparently was destroyed 850, 900 AD. But those seven cities of Sibylla and that civilization continued, and about 1300 AD, it all just finally disappeared, as did all of the people who did these Ogam scripts all over the world, all over the country. They just likewise disappeared over about a 100-year period. But now, for example, up in Castle Gardens, Wyoming.
Right. This is in the book.
Yes, it's in the book.
It's fascinating.
Up in Castle Gardens, Wyoming, is a location, again, written in Ogam script with a Gaelic dialect, which is, of course, Irish and Scotch. And here was this inscription that said that this was the location of the first money-changing bank in the New World. Here was a bank that was changing money, these different coins and so forth, for their relative worth, and also where people could take these coins then and go ahead and purchase the finds of the Celtic people who were here. And interestingly enough, this bank did not charge interest. It very clearly stated that they did not charge interest. And of course, we know that it said, "Thou shalt not."
Right.
Charge usury. And
that's just one of the evidences that these people were the people of the Bible.
Yes, they were.
Now, I probably ought to interject something here, because there's a lot of people that are probably hearing the word Hebrew and the term Israel on that cross, and they're right away thinking the term Jew. But you see, the term Jew and the term Israel, the term Jews and the term Israelites are not synonymous. Now, God had told Abraham that his descendants would form a multitude of nations. That's found in Genesis chapter 17, 1 through 7. Hear me out. You read it yourself. He said that his seed would form a multitude of nations. And, of course, we know they formed the nation of Israel. But we also know that that nation divided into two nations, the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And we also know that, 700, 800 years before Christ, the house of Israel was taken into Assyrian captivity, and they scattered throughout the world, and the law of their God, you can read about it in Deuteronomy, if you will, I think there's other places too, did not allow them to charge interest. Think about it. And now, not only that, in 2 Samuel 7:10, the prophet Nathan comes to David and tells the proclamation that God was going to give his people another country. Could it be the North American continent? Well, it's interesting to me that the pilgrims, when they were launching out on their journey to come to North America, that they used 2 Samuel 7:10 as their text. But here they were, somebody up there in Castle Gardens, Wyoming, involved with banking without interest, a concept, of course, that even Americans today don't understand. But what time period was this?
Now, of course, this was before the time of Christ. That portion
right.
was
that's what I'm saying. That's what's so fascinating to me.
Yes.
Is we were talking about 700, 800 AD. Now we're BC.
Yes. And so the Israel people were in a lot of different places, apparently, in the world. And, of course, remember, Jesus came to Israel. I come not only but to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And so he came to Israel to save them from their enemies right. and those who hate them.
By the way, that's Matthew 15:24.
So. That's correct. And, of course, the prophecy that Zechariah had in Luke 1, it talks about that John the Baptist was the forerunner to the Messiah who was to come to save Israel from those who hate them and from their enemies. And so he came to Israel, and we must understand that. That is who he came to. Well, now, getting back to this situation here in the western portion of the United States, and back to Eratosthenes, this Cyrene, it's interesting, again, that these people in Cyrene were Greeks. They were from the Danaites from Greece, and they were there, and it was Eratosthenes, a Greek, who had transplanted himself into Cyrene in northern Libya, who developed a system of navigation. Well, the Libyan people in their ships decided that they would find out whether Eratosthenes was correct. And so now they had magnetic compasses, very crude perhaps, and they all had a very crude form of a sextant to know where they were with respect to the stars, and they and the sun, and they then took off and went on down through the Suez Canal, which was built by King Darius. The Suez Canal is an old canal. Went on down through the Red Sea. They went into the Indian Ocean. Then they went on around over through the Indonesian Straits. They went on from there into the Pacific Ocean. And from the Pacific Ocean came into the western portion of the United States. And this evidence is abounds in Nevada. And they went on into interior Nevada, where it was a land very similar to the part there in Libya and so forth that they came from. So they made themselves at home, and in the canyons there, and right today are these inscriptions, and you can go see them for yourself. Here are these inscriptions that show their terms of astronomy. There is a map there, written, inscribed right on the wall of the canyons there, that is of the North American continent. And you can the map very clearly shows that here is Hudson Bay on down the east coast. It doesn't show the Florida Peninsula, but it goes on down and shows the Yucatan, the Gulf of Mexico, goes on down into the Isthmus, and then it comes up the west coast and goes up and it shows Alaska. And here is, by Mercadian grid projection, the map of North America. Now, what does
Incredible.
This tell you? That means that these people were up in Hudson Bay. That means they were all up and down the East Coast. It means that they were down on the Isthmus. They were up and down the West Coast, and they were all as far north as Alaska. Well, now, they had in there their mathematics. They had the alphabet there on these walls. They had, as I pointed out, astronomy. So here was a people who were so far advanced. Now, when you talk to the Paiute and the Shoshones, they say, gosh, we don't know who wrote those. It wasn't any of our people. And so it was the ancient ones, those who were here before, and they called them the Hohokams. That was the name the Indians gave them. So it was just the ancient
Incredible.
Ones, those who come before.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure that if you've been watching this, this might sound incredible to you. Evidence of writings from those European people way before the time of Christ, Christians here before Columbus, but yet we're told Columbus is the man who discovered America. There's a lot of information in this little book, and I think you'd better seriously consider ordering it. Columbus discovering America. Why are we being told that? And why is it the political correct position today is talk about the evil white man. Everything's fine until the evil white man came and destroyed things. Could it be that there is an enemy of God's people? Those people that would proclaim the gospel of Christ to all the peoples of the world who have a purpose, mission. It's possible that we're just not being told the truth on purpose. So I want you to write and request the book called Columbus for America.
Christian before Columbus.
Excuse me. Christian, thank you, Pastor Jones, before Columbus. And the mailing address is Truth for the Times, P.O. Box 766, La Porte, Colorado, 80535. And I'm going to give that one more time. But I kind of want to wrap this down, Pastor Jones. There's more we could talk about, but got a few minutes left. You kind of give us a... You tell me what you want to say here.
Well, as we look back at these peoples that were here, I think that we will see something in common with a more recent incident down in Mexico and Central America. Both of these situations really failed. Neither one of them really planted civilizations that really furthered the kingdom of God. I think that if we look at these ancient peoples, although they were our peoples, came for spoil. And I do believe that in all probability, they came to enslave people, to make people either cheap labor or free labor.
Uh-huh.
And in doing so, they did not please God. They had a system that just didn't meet his requirements.
In other words,
and so they were failed.
We're not seeking first the things of God, were they?
That's correct. Now, the organization that followed again was that of Christopher Columbus himself. He came not really to find riches in India. He knew where he was. He had known of the seven cities of
Spain. Didn't he have a map?
He had maps. He had all sorts of things. He had information. He also knew where these locations were. And when Cortez and Coronado and those conquistadors followed him, just a matter of 20 years later, when they planted the Spanish flag on the Mexican soil there and came on in and took Mexico City with a mere 300 people, 300 men on horses and their fire sticks called guns, they enslaved those people one more time, and they then started looking for those fabulous seven cities of Cibola. And Cortez and Coronado and all of the men headed north because they knew they were there. And, of course, again, all of that entire concept was for naught. It failed. We know that the trials and tribulations they had of hauling that gold all the way back, the Spanish Armada, many of the ships were sunk, and the cost or price of gold went way down because they loaded the European market. None of it
actually
was really
they experienced inflation, didn't they?
Yes, they experienced inflation. Now, because of it. Well, but then let's take what happened with the pilgrims. Here they came. They didn't come for gold. They didn't come to enslave people. They came to plant the kingdom of God. And there was a vast difference, and God blessed that planting of those pilgrims. They came to bring in the kingdom of God. And they believed that sincerely, and they also knew in their own hearts that they were the true Israel of the Bible.
You know, a book that I carry and promote often is The Light and the Glory. And it talks how these people, pilgrims and others coming, refer to this as the new promised land, themselves as the children of Israel.
Yes.
And I've always thought it's extremely significant that on their voyage, their initial voyage to come to the North American continent, their sermon was based upon 2 Samuel 7:10,
yes,
where God said He'd give them another land.
Yes.
Only this time it seemed like their taking root took place.
It did take place. And as long as we maintain the concept, even though there were those who brought slavery into America from Africa, and Antichrist forces were the ones that were selling those slaves and even forcing them on the Virginians, for example. Even though that was extant in the New World, it wasn't a prime concept of working. Our forefathers worked. They leveled the land. They cut the trees down. They took the stumps out by horse teams and then burned them. And they made their
what
did their
are
own
you
work
some
with
kind of
children.
Racist? I mean, don't you understand that you're supposed to be talking about how these people came and destroyed the environment and destroyed the culture. Of course, that's the politically correct position, but what you're given, I'm being sarcastic here, is truth.
But it's true. And of course, as long as we as a people believed who we were, and believed in the Bible, and believed in true Christianity,
and knew who we were,
and worked toward it, we were the people. And only after we gave that up and started following other gods, and today the Ten Commandments is off the wall of the church, schools and the rooms in the schools. You can't have the cross, the sign of the cross, or the manger scene in the city parks and so forth.
We sure do chase a dollar again, though, don't we?
It has become a
God. What you're saying is when these people went after the gold, they lost the land.
That's right.
And they forsook God.
Yes.
We're losing the land. We're going after the gold. You're hearing truth and history that's not politically correct, only correct. That's why I want you to write for the book called Christians Before Columbus. It's available for a $3 offering. The mailing address, if you'd like to write and request it, is Truth for the Times, P.O. Box 766, LaPorte, Colorado, 80535. We'd like to send it to you. Just write and request it and close a $3 offering. Also, we're running out of time now, and I want, Pastor Jones, for you to take this time to tell the people about your newsletter real briefly and how they can order it if they'd like to get it.
Well, they may order my newsletter. It comes monthly, every other month. And you can order from the same address, Pastor Earl F. Jones, Star Route 2, Box 39, Deming, New Mexico, zip code 88030. And, of course, I will send it to anyone who asks for it. It is free of charge, and it works really on a gift basis.
It's an excellent newsletter, particularly if you're interested in true history. I would highly recommend it. The prophets made it clear, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Christ made it clear that he is the way and the truth and the life. You know something? If you reject Jefferson's simple truth of 2 plus 2 is 4, you reject Christ because Christ is the truth. And those who have rejected Christ, the Antichrist forces in our land that are writing many of our history books today, publishing what is politically correct in the way of history, Columbus discovered. They, I'm telling you, are withholding the truth. Truth is something you have to go after, and that's why we are offering the book, Christians Before Columbus. I hope you write for it. I appreciate you listening to this interview that was done for our special television program, Truth for the Time. Pray for our labors to get the truth out, and pray for our country. And we thank you for being with us. Join us again. Goodbye.
You've been watching Truth for the Times with Pastor Peter J. Peters. We hope you will take time to write Pastor Peters your comments and requests. This broadcast was made possible by the free will tithes and offerings of those who love truth and want to pass it on. If you want to help Pastor Peters to that end in these Truth for the Times broadcasts, you may do so with your prayers and your support. To write Pastor Peters or to order in this broadcast, write to Truth for the Times, P.O. Box 766, LaPorte, Colorado, 80535.